This is Taking Aim with
Rav Sharon Men
and Maya Schoen. Our program today, Obama's War Cabinet, The Depths of Duplicity. Barack Obama was elected president by tens of millions of Americans, hoping that he would end the war in Iraq. They had expectations that he would be a peace candidate. But far from bringing an end to U.S. militarism, President-elect Obama, in announcing his new administration, is preparing to consolidate a U.S. presence in Iraq and escalate the war in Afghanistan and precipitate a war with Pakistan. The prospect of this dangerous new war looms as Obama's advisors lay out their plans for confronting Iran, too. On Monday, December 1st, Barack Obama announces his war cabinet. New York Senator and former First Lady Hillary Rodham Clinton as Secretary of State. Robert M. Gates, the current Secretary of Defense and former CIA Director, as the Secretary of Defense, remaining in his position. General James Jones, the former NATO commander, overseeing the troops in Afghanistan, and currently a pitchman for the U.S. Chamber of Commerce, position on energy, will become the National Security Advisor. Interestingly, the peace groups are giving Barack Obama time. They are saying he hasn't even been in office. Let's give him a chance. Yet, as Stratfor, the think tank of intelligence, commented on November 26th, quote, Obama's supporters believed that Obama's position on Iraq was profoundly at odds with the Bush administration's. We could never clearly locate the difference, Stratfor commented, and then went on to say, the brilliance of Obama's presidential campaign was that he convinced his hardcore supporters that he intended to make a radical shift in policies across the board without ever specifying what policies he was planning to shift and never locking out the possibility of a flexible interpretation of his commitments. Let's look at what one of his stalwart supporters said. Marilyn Katz, a veteran of the peace movement dating back to her days as a member of Students for Democratic Society. She helped organize the October 2002 rally in Chicago's Federal Plaza, where Obama declared his opposition to what he called, quote, a dumb war. Now, she admitted that many liberals chose to ignore the part of the speech that Obama had made in that Chicago Federal Plaza, that they forgot the part of the speech where Obama stressed that he was not against military force and he actually urged more aggressive pursuit of Al-Qaeda. In other words, Barack Obama is consistent with a position of a war cabinet. Quote, Katz said, a lot of people took his position on Iraq and projected our politics onto him. And that was never him. It was never true. Today on Taking Aim, we discuss Obama's war cabinet. Ralph?
Maya, the former apartheid prime minister of South Africa, Ver Woerd, once said famously, it is possible that not every liberal is a communist, but I have yet to meet a communist who didn't pretend he was a liberal. And what Ver Woerd was alluding to was this posture of those who are, in a sense, the legatees of the Stalinized Communist Party in the United States and indeed in the world, to provide cover for a sector of the bourgeoisie and forever to foment the illusion in that sector of the ruling class and to induce those who are aspiring to challenge or to change the politics of imperialism and the inevitable exploitation and repression and criminal rapacity of the capitalist ruling class, forever to mislead into direct those who want change into the arms of their very oppressors. These are liberal enablers, for the real obstacle to change in our society constitutes not support for the, quote, right wing or the Republican Party or that wing of capital that is explicit, but rather for those who purport to represent some modification or some reform containment of the ruling class, but in fact are as deeply embedded in the implementation of these ruling class policies as any of their colleagues who are, for cosmetic purposes, postured as nominal opponents. When we listen to the mewling and bleating of those who had whipsawed people into supporting the Democratic Party yet one more time, casting aside their intelligence and their experience into one more time beating the bushes for support for another Democrat, another faker, another misleader, what kind of language are they using about the war cabinet of Barack Obama? It's deeply disturbing. This is continuity. This is not change. It reminds me of Casablanca, the famous film with Humphrey Bogart, which had its own Stalinist content. We could address that another time. When the police commissioner in Casablanca, who has been taking money under the table for the his cut from the proceeds of gambling at Rick's place, wants to shut down Rick's. He says, gambling? Gambling? I'm shocked. I'm shocked. Pro-war politics on the part of a Democrat? Deception on the part of the president-elect when it comes to determining policy? I'm shocked. I'm shocked. It's what the Jesuits call invincible ignorance. The selection by Barack Obama of his cabinet flows consistently with the embrace of the ruling class, with his call for continuity, with his politics of moving across partisan lines. Let's refer back to the program that we did last week. We ended with a discussion of the Attorney General selected by Barack Obama and the so-called illusion of change. Eric Holder was the enabler of the pardon we discussed of the billionaire fugitive investor and Zionist operative Mark Rich. And that was done through the corruption of the then-president of the United States, Bill Cheney. But the enabler...
Bill Clinton.
Excuse me, Bill Clinton, yes. The distinction is also in the slip. Clinton and Mark Rich were like lips to the teeth. And Mark Rich, by the way, was represented in his quest for a pardon from his multiple crimes and sequestering of corrupt funds by, appropriately enough, Lewis Scooter Libby. But the person who facilitated this was Eric Holder, the black functionary who was the first African-American to become now, as the New York Times put it, the nation's top law enforcement official. What's particularly important about the role of Eric Holder, because it illuminates what this representative of the ruling class really amounts to, and I'm speaking now of Barack Obama. Eric Holder was in the party's leadership for police state measures enacted under the Bush administration. Eric Holder played the leading role in the reauthorization of the Patriot Act in 2005, for which, of course, Barack Obama also voted. Eric Holder parlayed his government service into a lucrative position at the Washington, D.C. lobbying firm of Covington & Burling, which counts big tobacco amongst its most important clients. Eric Holder... His most high-profile case was his representation of Chiquita Brands International, whose multimillionaire executives faced charges of aiding terrorism because they armed and financed the right-wing death squads of Colombia. And Eric Holder was the enabler. He got Chiquita off the hook. He made arrangements with the Justice Department that instead of indicting them for conspiracy to commit murder and assassination and holding them for criminal charges for the deaths of thousands of Colombian peasants, they would not find more than 0.55% of their annual revenue. despite massive evidence and the company's own admissions that it had paid out tens of millions of dollars to the so-called Self-Defense Forces of Colombia, known by their Spanish acronym AUC. They carried out the massacre, assassination, kidnapping, and torture of tens of thousands of Colombian workers, peasants, trade union officials, and left-wing political activists. Half of the payments were made after AUC had already been designated a foreign terrorist organization, and a full year after the Justice Department pro forma warned Chiquita that it would face prosecution for aiding and abetting terrorism if it did not cease to provide the funds for the assassination program in Colombia. But this was official policy. It wasn't just Chiquita. It was Dole Pineapple. It was Del Monte. It was Coca-Cola. It was at the heart of the politics of the Clinton administration, and the facilitator for the death squad operations in Colombia was the now Attorney General of the United States, Mr. Holder. The champion of so-called civil and democratic rights? The defender of the oppressed? No, the legal servant of the corporations involved in criminality, in mass murder and repression. And the chief law enforcement officer for the transition team and the facilitator of Eric Holder as Attorney General, why, the current FBI Director Robert Mueller, who will be maintained. He will be maintained in not only the politics of Bush, but in the politics of Holder under Clinton. Death squad apparatus, death squad operations. And Gates and Holder are, again, like lips to the teeth. Cohen Hallinan on September 10th, 2008. Business as usual for the Obama administration. The return of U.S. death squads from Afghanistan to Africa. Philip Alston of the United Nations Human Rights Council has stated that heavily armed international death squads are murdering scores of Afghan civilians. He spoke to a series of operations across Afghanistan coordinated by the United States and, of course, its Secretary of Defense, Mr. Gates. But that's not just a matter of Afghanistan. The AFRICOM that's now being set up across Africa to facilitate U.S. Securing of complete dominance and control over African oil is accompanied by what? Why, death squads, special forces, CIA units. This is the politics of Holder, and it is the politics of Gates, and it's above all the politics of Barack Obama.
Ralph, your point is well taken. Let's return to the Wall Street Journal and its editorial of November 28th, Obama's War Cabinet, with the subtitle, Gates and Jones Are Welcome Signs of Continuity. Continuity is exactly what the Wall Street Journal promotes. The names floated for Barack Obama's national security team are drawn exclusively from conservative, centrist, and pro-military circles without even a single, yes, not one, chosen to represent the anti-war wing of the Democratic Party. Now, that is not a quote from the Wall Street Journal. The Wall Street Journal is herein quoting Robert Dreyfus, who wrote in The Nation magazine on its website. But what the Wall Street Journal states, who are we to interfere with Dreyfus's despair? The Gates selection, the Wall Street Journal notes, is an implicit endorsement of President Bush's surge in Iraq and its military architect, General David Petraeus. More broadly, it recognizes that America will continue to deal with a daunting post-9/11 security environment. Most tellingly, the Wall Street Journal notes that the people of the United States are going to be too busy, as they say, too preoccupied with the economy, end quote, to notice what Barack Obama is doing. And Mr. Obama will have plenty of political running room, one, as a result of Americans being preoccupied with the economy, and two, with their giving him room to move. Quote, his own pledge to remove most combat troops by 2010 leaves open exactly what he means by combat and most. The new status of forces agreement with Iraq also commits the U.S. to leave by 2011. These decisions can now be made with a view to the realities in Iraq rather than to the American campaign trail, end of quote. And the New York Times substantiates what is said in the Wall Street Journal. On November 27th, an article by Tom Shanker, who writes on the military for the New York Times, Common Ground for Defense Chief and Obama. As defined by his commander-in-chief, the mission of Defense Secretary Robert M. Gates for the last 2 years has been to win the war in Iraq. But beginning on January 20th, Mr. Gates' mission will be to end the war in Iraq, notes the New York Times, under an agreement with a new commander-in-chief, President-elect Barack Obama. This contrast might seem to leave Mr. Gates consigned to serious whiplash. But what the New York Times reporter Tom Shanker notes is that there is no whiplash. In fact, there is common ground. Currently, there are 15 combat brigades out of 50 brigades in Iraq, with the other brigades providing supplies, protection, and care of the troops. But there are also an equal number of private support personnel, that is, mercenaries and private personnel hired by Blackwater and the other companies. So when they talk about moving troops, what they are talking about is maintaining troops in Iraq, as many as 70,000, and then shifting troops to Afghanistan. As Mr. Gates told Congress in September, quote, I would urge our leaders to keep in mind that we should expect to be involved in Iraq for years to come. Ralph?
Well, Maya, Barack Obama did an interview on Democracy Now! In which he addressed specifically the question of troop quantities and the number of troops to be maintained in Iraq. He stated that he intends to retain 140,000 mercenaries, these contract killers. It's Blackwater, it's DynCorp, it's the whole panoply of privatized killing apparatus that is answerable to nobody except the proto-fascist collusion with the repressive state. He stated he intends to maintain 140,000 of these mercenaries in Iraq and up to 100,000 additional U.S. troops. Barack Obama doesn't have to depend upon Robert Gates for a politics of support for escalation of the war in Iraq. He is the articulator of this very program himself. He is not merely being aided by those he is appointing to his cabinet. He is calling the shots with respect to that policy. And that's the gravamen of having the continuity of Robert Gates. And the Wall Street Journal is very clear. If the reports are correct, and the president-elect asks Robert Gates to stay on as Secretary of Defense, and if he names retired Marine General James Jones as the National Security Advisor, these are the administration posts most critical to the successful conduct of new wars, not just the wars in Iraq and Afghanistan, but of wars with Iran, North Korea, and who knows where else with these personnel picks. For Mr. Obama has revealed his bias for competence, experience, and continuity. The Gates selection is an endorsement of President Bush's surge in Iraq and its military architect, General David Petraeus. More broadly, it recognizes, states the Wall Street Journal, that America will continue to deal with the post-9/11 security environment. As a member of the Iraq study group, Mr. Gates was against the surge before Bush made support for a condition of his taking the Pentagon job. But he has supervised the successful, new, enhanced, enlarged counterinsurgency strategy in Iraq and championed a new generation of military leaders, chiefly General Petraeus, who commands U.S. forces with a policy that will be applied across the Middle East as he pours additional troops into Afghanistan. Is there any ambiguity about this, brothers and sisters? This is the agenda for the expansion of imperial reach, for increased warfare, for a huge increment in the number of troops. And what about the cost of that, as they spend $7.7 acknowledged trillion dollars on the captains of capital? every spare penny that isn't put into the pockets of the bank kleptocracy will be put into the pockets of the merchants of death as the apparatus of military rule is expanded on a planetary scale. That is why Obama's cabinet selections, as the World Socialist website stated so presciently on December 1st, win high praise from the right. Prominent voices from the political right are endorsing President-elect Barack Obama for his economic and national security teams. It's not just the Wall Street Journal. A rave from Karl Rove. Now, there's an endorsement that tells you a lot. Karl Rove is ecstatic over the appointments by Barack Obama, calling them sound, intelligent, reassuring, competent, inspiring indeed is the language that Karl Rove, the shady trickster of the Bush administration, lavishes on Barack Obama, who the Wall Street Journal points out, the person who talked about a speedy withdrawal from Iraq by selecting James Jones, the former Supreme Allied Commander of NATO, is reassuring us that the surge strategy in Iraq will be applied generally. President-elect Obama has given us reassurances about his future policy, his ability to shape it, and the quid pro quo between Gates and Obama. Gates has staked out his positions on missile defense in Eastern Europe, enlarging the military, modernizing the U.S. nuclear arsenal. Indeed, the very national security hallmarks of the Obama administration, which is embracing, by the way, note this, brothers and sisters, missile defense in Eastern Europe, that is escalating the challenge to Russia, putting missile defense in Poland, putting missile defense in Czechoslovakia, targeting all the major cities of the former Soviet Union and of Russia itself. Is this an agenda for anything more than expansion of military reach and expansion of war, brothers and sisters? The common ground, the New York Times tells us, for Defense Chief Gates and Obama, for the last 2 years, there's been a common ground. For the last 2 years, the politics of expansion to this war has been the common ground shared by Barack Obama and Mr. Gates. The rhetoric for the public has been rhetoric to do what? To con people, to enlist them, to seduce them, to essentially what? To effectively castrate a movement for transformation of our society, to take away its essence and to confine it to the politics of collusion and collaboration.
Ralph, I think we should look at a series of articles that appeared on consortiumnews.com. November 13th, Robert Parry, The Danger of Keeping Robert Gates. And again on November 25th, Parry again, Obama asked the Kremlin about Gates. Robert Parry gives in detail the content of Russian memos that were sent in 1980 with respect to the October surprise investigation by Representative Lee Hamilton that was going on in Congress. And then Ray McGovern writing on Robert Gates. Ray McGovern, the former CIA analyst, who it turns out was the supervisor for Robert Gates when Robert Gates started out in the CIA as a low-level analyst. Ray McGovern's article published in Common Dreams on November 20th, Robert Gates as Bad as Rumsfeld, and also on consortiumnews.com on November 23rd, again by McGovern, Gates and the Urge to Surge. I think if we look at these articles, we get insight into Gates's background and how he came to be the Secretary of Defense under President Bush, and now continuing on with President-elect Barack Obama to be the Secretary of Defense in the first days of the Obama administration. Importantly, Parry refers to the October surprise and also the Iraq Gate scandal. That is the pitting of Iran and Iraq battling each other during an eight-year-long Iran-Iraq war, which was initiated in large part by Zbigniew Brzezinski, Carter's national security advisor.
Robert Parry is a person who has written extensively about the background of Gates and his role in what was known as the October Surprise. I'm going to comment in a moment on what you've just said, namely that the author of the politics and the strategy for invading Iran after the revolution in Iran in 1979. Those were the politics of President Carter and notably of his national security advisor, Zbigniew Brzezinski. Robert Parry would have it that these indeed were the politics of Gates and of Brent Scowcroft and of Bush Sr. They were indeed, but they were initiated by the Democrats. They were initiated by Zbigniew Brzezinski. It was Zbigniew Brzezinski who, in the aftermath of the fall of the Shah, arranged the clandestine meeting in Kuwait between Saddam Hussein, King Fahd of Saudi Arabia, the Emir Asaba of Kuwait, and Brzezinski himself. And there it was arranged that Saddam Hussein would be induced to invade Iran and to detach the oil-producing province of Khuzestan, where the Arab minority and the oil workers were to be found, and by so doing would essentially amputate the most valuable economic province of the country and essentially starve out the Iranian government and the Iranian revolution. That conspiracy, if you like, to send Saddam Hussein into Khuzestan was, of course, resisted by the oil workers of Iran, who were, as the imperialists never calculate, the most politicized sector of the Iranian working class, largely in the National Party of Mossadegh and the Tudeh Party, which is the Communist Party of Iran, recognizing immediately what the game plan was to amputate Khuzestan. It is that which then was fully embraced by the Bush administration. And let's now turn to
The Reagan administration prior to the Bush administration, and that's where we get to the Iraq Gate scandal.
Well, actually, Maya, you're quite right about that, because in the immediate reaction on the part of the Khomeini regime to the invasion of their country when the U.S. embassy was seized, it was, in fact, the plot, if you like, of George Bush, who was the vice presidential candidate of Reagan, and of William Casey, who was the criminal head of the CIA and involved in assassination within the United States and without, and his faithful servant, Robert Gates, who went to Paris and met the representatives of Khomeini to cut a deal, a criminal deal, which was continue to hold the U.S. Citizens hostage until after the election. That was the October surprise. The Khomeini people agreed, in exchange for which these Israelis were pouring money and funds into Iran at direction of the United States. So Robert Parry talks about nearly 16 years ago, during the last transition from a President Bush to a Democrat, Moscow made an extraordinary gesture to Washington. The Kremlin supplied a summary of its intelligence about the secret U.S.-Iranian contacts in the 1980s.
This is Taking Aim with
Ralph Schoenman
and Maya Schoen. Our program today, Obama's War Cabinet, The Depths of Duplicity. Ralph, before you continue, what Robert Parry is speaking about in this series of articles are two things. One, the Iraq Gate scandal, which is the arming of both Iraq and Iran during the war, the exchange of weapons, including the procurement of cluster bombs and chemicals to produce chemical weapons for the war against Iran that were provided to Saddam Hussein, and via the Israelis, the arming of Iran, and the October surprise. Ralph?
The imperialist apparatus of both the Democrats and the Republicans were engaged in doing with respect to both Iran and Iraq. On the one hand, they engineered the invasion of Iran by Iraq. On the other hand, when their resistance unfolded from the Iranian population, as Henry Kissinger said at the time, bleed them both white. over 1 million casualties. As the U.S. armed Saddam Hussein, a point man on that was Donald Rumsfeld and Robert Gates, and they were providing chemical and biological weapons to Iraq at the time. At the same time, they were engineering for the Israelis to arm the Iranians, and they were making money on both ends of the deal. And that's partly what Irangate was about, because they were selling aid for Iran, and they were profiting on the money they got for the arms that were supplied to Iran. But what Parry refers to with respect to this is the National Security Committee of the Russian Duma forwarding a secret intelligence report to the Democratic congressperson Lee Hamilton, who had asked for Moscow's files as part of an investigation into the Reagan-Bush campaign criminal collusion with the Khomeini regime to hold on to the hostages in order to compromise Carter at the time of the election. The Russian report arrived via the U.S. Embassy in Moscow. The contents, as Robert Parry describes them, were stunning. The Russians confirmed that their intelligence had revealed that the meetings between the Republicans and the Iranians in Europe during the campaign of 1980 had indeed occurred. Now, what's interesting about this is that much of this had been documented by the Mossad operative Ari Bin Manashi, who would later publish an extraordinary book called By Way of Deception, and then another book called The Other Side of Deception, in which he exposed the false flag operations of the Mossad and of the Central Intelligence Agency, from the discotheque bombings in Berlin to the setting up of Libya, the whole panoply of duplicity and false flag operations, of which 9/11 is a pristine example, that define imperial politics of both parties during this very period. And what's so significant about what Parry is describing here when he says, Obama, is the headline of his article, asked the Kremlin about Gates. Well, it's a little disingenuous of Mr. Parry to pose the question in that form, and I'll come to that particular point in a moment. Because what happened was, when the Russians disclosed the intelligence and provided the documentation to Lee Hamilton, Lee Hamilton and his chief counsel, Lawrence Bisala, covered it up. He ordered the probe wrapped up with a conclusion of his Committee of Republican Party Innocence, because it was clear that to expose this collusion would go far beyond exposing the October surprise. It would expose Brzezinski. It would expose Carter. It would expose the Democrats. It would expose the imperial plotting and collusion, setting up the invasion of Iran, colluding in supplying chemicals and biological weapons to Saddam Hussein. And, of course, the very predicate for the first Gulf War, when they suckered Saddam Hussein by encouraging their creature, the emir of Kuwait, Asaba, to move his arbitrary frontiers 900 square kilometers north until they sat on the largest oil field of Iraq, the Ramallah oil field. And then the emir of Kuwait purchased the Santa Fe Drilling Corporation in Alhambra, California, for $2.3 billion to get their slant or horizontal drilling equipment. Who do you think was on the board of directors of the Santa Fe Drilling Corporation? Brent Scowcroft, the national security advisor to George Bush and the collaborator with Brzezinski only yesterday in writing an article, Brzezinski being a principal advisor to Obama. And the other was Robert Mosbacher, Bush's Secretary of Commerce. As I say, the ruling class is a criminal kleptocracy, and they bought the slant drilling equipment, did the Kuwaitis, and then proceeded to suck out $14 billion of Iraqi oil. And now Bush Sr., support from the Democrats, goes to Saddam Hussein and uses Joseph Wilson. Remember Joseph Wilson and Valerie Plame? He uses Joseph Wilson to say to Saddam, oh, you've got a real grievance here. You should rectify your border with Kuwait. Huh? They entrapped him. They sent James Baker. They sent a message from Bush Sr. They sent Joseph Wilson directly himself to speak to Saddam, go rectify your border with Kuwait. And that was the predicate for the U.S. saturation bombing of Iraq and the sending of 250,000 troops to Saudi Arabia in order to be positioned to seize Arab Oil Direct. Those are the politics of which Perry speaks with reference to Gates. He says, I'm mentioning this document now because Gates is the American implicated by the Russians. It is Robert Gates, the CIA official who served on Carter's National Security Council staff before returning to the CIA as executive assistant to CIA Director Stansfield Turner. As translated by the U.S. Embassy, the Russian report stated, Robert Gates, National Security Council staffer of Jimmy Carter and a former CIA director, George H.W. Bush, was a key figure in the meetings with the Iranians in Paris in October 1980. And the report, which is quite elaborate, which was suppressed by the Democrats, goes on to say that Gates then also was a key figure in the Iran-Contra scandal involving the trading of arms for hostages and the clandestine military support given to Iraq's Saddam Hussein during his eight-year war with Iran. Gates was a key figure in this, and he was facilitated by two important Democrats, Senator David Boren, the Senate Intelligence Committee chairman, and Boren's chief of staff, George Tenet. Well, guess what? Tenet becomes the head of the CIA for Clinton and then continues to be the head of the CIA for George W. Bush. Can you slide a piece of paper between the Republicans and the Democrats? It's not just a question of party affiliation. It's the same gang of criminal thugs. In 1992 to 1993, CIA Director Gates got another helping hand from Lee Hamilton regarding the October surprise scandal, which, as Perry puts it, Hamilton swept under a very lumpy rug. During campaign 2008, why, Gates got lucky. Boren and Hamilton emerged as the senior foreign policy advisors to Barack Obama. Oh, fancy that. They are now reportedly the key figures in the transition contingent urging the president-elect to retain their old friend as Pentagon chief. Gates' reappointment is expected after Thanksgiving. Before then, the Obama foreign policy transition team might want to ask, what information exists in Moscow's intelligence files? Don't hold your breath, brothers and sisters. Now, here is the continuation of the report by Parry called The Danger of Keeping Robert Gates. Barack Obama may retain Bush's Defense Secretary Robert Gates as a gesture to wartime continuity, bipartisanship, and respect for the Washington insider community, which has embraced Gates as a new, wise man. But, says Perry, if Obama keeps Gates on, the president will be employing someone who embodies the worst elements of U.S. national security policy over the past three decades, including responsibility for what Obama fingered as a chief concern, quote, politicized intelligence. Perry then proceeds to cite, quote, former CIA analyst Melvin A. Goodman, to identify Gates as the chief action officer for the Reagan administration's drive to tailor intelligence reporting to White House political desires. A top Kremlinologist, Goodman describes how Gates reversed the CIA tradition of delivering tough-minded intelligence reports with the bark on. Perry writes, that ethos began to erode in 1973 with President Richard Nixon's appointment of James Schlesinger as CIA director and Gerald Ford's choice of George H.W. Bush in 1976. And the principle of objectivity wasn't swept away until 1981 when Reagan put his campaign chief William Casey as CIA director. Casey chose Robert Gates to run the analytical division, and Gates turned the approach of straightforward intelligence on its head, writes Perry. And Goodman says, Gates consistently told his analysts to make sure never to stick your finger in the eye of the policymaker. A few comments about this, brothers and sisters. Mr. Goodman, who was an intelligence operative, a senior CIA official himself, now being celebrated on the so-called liberal left, and who was complaining about Robert Gates. What is Goodman talking about? the Central Intelligence Agency is a key player in the assassination of John F. Kennedy. The Central Intelligence Agency played the key role in facilitating the murder of Kennedy through their instrument Clay Shaw. The Central Intelligence Agency had Lee Harvey Oswald as their operative. They sent him as a false defector to the Soviet Union. The Central Intelligence Agency cooked document after document. Casey's first national intelligence estimate has nothing to do with a newfound inclination to cook the books. Every document coming out of the Central Intelligence Agency was geared towards servicing a policy of conquest and repression, and indeed of a proto-fascist architecture that the coup d'etat that represents the Kennedy execution embodies. This is continuity indeed, brothers and sisters. Casey and Gates, Robert Gates, and the collaborators within the Democratic Party who service him, from Boren to Hamilton to Brzezinski, it's part of one tiny ruling class oligarchy. There's the continuity. Gates promoted pliable CIA careers to top positions. In the mid-1980s, the role of Gates was central, and Goodman notes this. The Reagan administration would not accept any sign of Soviet weakness or constraint, and CIA Director Casey and Deputy Director Gates made sure that intelligence analysis presented the Russian bear as threatening and warlike. What, that's something that originates with Casey and Gates? They all do this. That's the same game they play with the terrorists, as with the Soviet Union, now today with the menace of terror. They are the authors of the terror, and they father this upon their nominal opponents. Chief of Staff Boren and Chief of Staff Tenet are the implementers of the politics that put Gates in the position to collude and to do what he did. He always managed to slip past relying on his Boy Scout looks, says Perry. Boy Scout looks spare me. For his 1991 confirmation, we're speaking again of Gates, the influential friends like Senate Intelligence Committee Chair David Boren and Boren's Chief of Staff George Tenet made sure Gates got the votes he needed. Gates credited his friend Boren in his book From the Shadows with clearing away the obstacles. David took it as a personal challenge to get me confirmed. And Tenet's help on Gates earned him some chits with the Bush family, which paid off in 2001 when George Tenet, Clinton's last CIA director, was kept on by George W. Bush, who he served loyally. Continuity, brothers and sisters, collusion in crime, collusion in imperial adventure, collusion in plotting against the survival interests of the working population of the United States through expanded war and for repression. And one more point regarding this. December 1st, Atlanta Journal-Constitution. Defense Secretary Robert Gates on Monday ordered top department leaders to conduct a broad review to determine how the military, the National Guard and Reserve, will deal with domestic disasters and to provide the training and equipment, quote, to defend the homeland. The 41-page memo signals an acknowledgment that the military must better recognizing the critical role of the National Guard, of reserves, and of U.S. Special Forces in homeland defense. His memo comes in the wake of a stinging 400-page independent commission report that concludes the military isn't sufficiently ready for the pending catastrophic attack on the United States, and the National Guard forces don't yet have sufficient equipment or training they will need for the job. This report, released earlier this year by the Commission on the National Guard and Reserves, states the Pentagon must use the nation's soldiers to create an operational force, fully trained, fully equipped, ready to defend the nation, to respond to crises, and to supplement the active duty of troops in combat within the homeland. Gates stated that the Guard and Reserves are an integral part of the force and must assume a greater role in military operations at home, and he pressed top leaders to review the training that active duty and reserves troops receive for homeland defense and for civil missions. Do you understand, brothers and sisters, the gravamen of embracing Gates, maintaining him as defense secretary, of embracing the program of escalating the military in Iran, in Afghanistan, in Pakistan, and beyond? The translation of that, brothers and sisters, is repression at home. The translation of that is to fake another attack like we just had in Mumbai within the United States itself. That's the agenda. And that's the complicity of Barack Obama with ruling class politics within our society.
In the few minutes remaining, we should address another appointment of Barack Obama, and that is General James L. Jones, former Marine Commandant and commander of all NATO military forces, which, as the New York Times notes, again Tom Shanker, November 11th, as commander of all NATO military forces, this required finding consensus for military action among squabbling member governments when the alliance took over significant portions of the war in Afghanistan. And make no mistake, Jones had said, NATO is not winning in Afghanistan. This startling assessment was a study led by General Jones for the Atlantic Council of the United States, a non-governmental organization that is a leader in crafting U.S. policy. He also has said that the war in Iraq caused the United States to take its eye off the ball in Afghanistan, very similar to Barack Obama's statements, and warned that the consequences of failure are just as serious in Afghanistan as they are in Iraq. Quote, symbolically, it's more the epicenter of terrorism than Iraq. If we don't succeed in Afghanistan, you're sending a very clear message to the terrorist organizations that the U.S., the U.N., and the 37 countries with troops on the ground can be defeated. Who is James L. Jones? And more importantly, what about Afghanistan and the movement of troops to Afghanistan? November 26th from Kabul, Afghan leader demands plan for foreign forces departure. The Washington Post, Candace Rondeau, reporting on comments of Afghan President Hamid Karzai, where he sharply criticized the United States and NATO, demanding a timeline for the withdrawal of foreign forces, at the same moment that Barack Obama is appointing General James L. Jones, who promotes increasing U.S. forces. Karzai's comments came late Tuesday in a speech to the U.N. Security Council delegation that was visiting Kabul. He accused the international community of failing, quote, to fight the Taliban properly. The war has gone on for 7 years, he noted. The Afghans don't understand anymore how come a little force like the Taliban can continue to exist, can continue to flourish, can continue to launch attacks with 40 countries in Afghanistan, with the entire NATO force in Afghanistan, with the entire international community behind them. Still, we are not able to defeat the Taliban. And he called for an end to the U.S. troops and for negotiations with the Taliban. In the U.S., however, the appointment of Jones and, as the New York Times specifies, President Bush should send 20,000 more troops to Afghanistan, encouraging President Bush to do so before Barack Obama even takes office. Who is Jones, who is becoming the National Security Advisor? James L. Jones had served in Vietnam. He had served in northern Iraq and Turkey during the first Gulf War in the Kurdish area. And then in 1992, he served in Bosnia-Herzegovina and Macedonia under Bill Clinton, in Afghanistan as the head of NATO, organizing the troops there. He is a man who has served many presidents, many administrations, and served them well, fitting in completely with the policies of Barack Obama, as he had with the policies of Bush, as he had with the policies of Clinton, as he had with the policies of the former President Bush, too. Ralph?
Yes, Maya. He's Chief Executive Officer of the Institute for 21st Century Energy, which is a policy and economic center affiliated with the United States Chamber of Commerce. He's Special Envoy for Middle East Security. He was Supreme Allied Commander in Europe. He's Commander of the United States European Command in NATO for 4 years. He is the 32nd Commandant of the United States Marine Corps. He is a public director of the Boeing Corporation and of Invacare Corporation.
And of Chevron.
He is chairman of the Atlantic Council of the United States, which is a key strategic body of the Defense Intelligence Agency and of intelligence operatives. He is a board of trustee chairman of the Center for Strategic and International Studies. He is chair of the Armed Forces Benefits Association. And as the New York Times states, he is intimately linked to Barack Obama. His briefing book, before President-elect Obama traveled to Afghanistan, it was General Jones who briefed him on American and Atlantic Alliance security and assistance mission. He briefs Mr. Obama on intelligence, security, and energy policy issues. And in his own words, make no mistake, NATO is not winning in Afghanistan. General Jones, before the Atlantic Council of the United States, the war in Iraq has caused the United States to take its eye off the ball in Afghanistan. The consequences of failure are just as serious. It is the epicenter of terrorism. We must succeed in Afghanistan. We must send a very clear message to the terrorist organizations that the United States and the 37 countries on the ground will not be defeated. So you don't need to look very far to understand who Barack Obama really is with respect to the intelligence, military, and security apparatus of the United States government. As the World Socialist website, in an important document on November 14th, the Obama transition points to more war and repression. It is not only that he sent Clinton's former Secretary of State, Madeleine Albright, to the Group of 20 meeting in Washington as his personal emissary. It is also, as we will discuss in more detail next week, that he has embraced the Clintons and Hillary Clinton with her call for the obliteration of Iraq, for the expansion of the U.S. military on a global scale. It is, again, as the World Socialist website so aptly put it, a seamless transition to endless war. That is the meaning of the Barack Obama presidency. That is a who's who of imperialist policy when it comes to looking at the transition team of Barack Obama. That is indeed the politics of the Democratic and Republican parties for the past 70 years in our society. No longer can we be enablers of this facade, of this charade, brothers and sisters. We will continue to describe the realities as we prepare for the next outrage, for the next staged operation, the next Mumbai, the next Islamabad with the Marriott Hotel. Even as we speak, they are preparing us for such an event in the New York subway system, as Chertoff has declared, and indeed as the Democratic policymakers have themselves assuring us. Brothers and sisters, it is a seamless bunch of criminals and collaborators within the ruling class. We cannot but continue to oppose, to mobilize the resistance to this cabal, and in doing so, we must identify exactly what Barack Obama represents in our society.
This has been Taking Aim with
Ralph Schoenman
and Maya Schoen. Our program today, Obama's War Cabinet, The Depth of Duplicity, will be on our website, www.takingaimradio.com. Please contact us at takingaim@pacbell.net. That's PACBELL.net. And next week, there is a special WBAI fundraiser. We'll be on for 2 hours from 4 to 6, and then we will be off the air the week after. So we will be with you next week. Please tune in earlier.